That night, Dominique has a dream. A dream about a streetcar in New Orleans. But her streetcar is not named Desire. In fact, the name is quite different indeed. The next afternoon, Dominique is looking after her sister's children. They keep pestering her to tell them a story.
Okay. Have you heard the story of the littlest pirate?
No?
You want to hear it?
Yes.
His name was Louis.
Louis Lafitte.
He was the direct descendant of the most famous pirates in New Orleans.
Jean and Pierre Lafitte.
Uh-huh. Well, he was very small. Not small, tiny small, but, you know, he was small. So people called him Little Louis Lafitte. And this is the story of how at age 10, he became captain of his own ship.
Pirate ship.
Except it wasn't really a ship. You'll see what it is. So, one night, as little Louis was walking home alone, a fog came creeping up out of the river and into the streets of New Orleans. And he was thinking about pirates, wishing he was a pirate. In fact, he was so lost in thought, he got lost. And he walked right past his street, and he kept on walking, and then he saw some very strange shapes looming up out of the fog. He knew what they were. Mausoleums. Do you know what that means? A mausoleum is like a place where they put the people when their bodies are dead, yes? They bury them, but above in the ground instead of underneath. They bury them in these buildings. They call them mausoleum. So where, if you see gravestones and mausoleums, where do you think you are?
Graveyard.
Yeah. Cemetery. He stopped. He stepped back. He tripped. He almost fell over. And then, crouching down, he felt around, and there was something big and cold under his hand. And it was metal, but it was rough. It was a rusted old railroad track. But a railroad track in a cemetery? This is very weird. What did he do? He followed the tracks until he walked right into a long, very strangely shaped mausoleum. This mausoleum was so strange. It had a headlight. Like a big headlight on one end, as big as your head. Like a big eye. And on the side of it were a row of windows. And so he stood on his tiptoes. He tried to peep into the windows. But they were too smudged with dirt. He could not see. So he looks over and he sees a step and a little door. That must be locked. But when he stepped onto the step, the door creaks and slowly folds open. And he knew this wasn't a mausoleum at all. Except it really was, as he'd soon find out. What was it? It was an old abandoned streetcar. It was. And then it started to pour rain coming down in buckets. And poor little Louis Lafitte is getting so wet, he says, oh, he hops out of the rain and into the cold, dank, musty, cobwebbed and yet strangely rather sweet-smelling and rather inviting and rather cozy and strangely comfortable old abandoned streetcar. The rain is pelting down, dumping on the metal roof, but inside he feels safe, as if he were home, and so he sat down in the driver's seat. But as he sat down in the driver's seat, there was a terrific flash of lightning. things happened at once. First, the door slammed shut, and the streetcar became alive.
Oh, but remember, little Louis Lafitte was descended from pirates, and it would take more than this to scare a Lafitte. Of course, it was enough to make anyone's hair stand on end. You see, little Louis Lafitte had very, very short hair, like a little brush cut, so his hair was already standing on end, but it was really scary.
And the second thing that happened, the streetcar began to move.
Creaking and groaning like some great metal monster slowly waking up. It starts to crawl down the rusted tracks and it's picking up speed. And then he begins to hear all this very odd little clickety-clackety-clickety-clacky things. Is it the train? No, it sounds like nothing he's ever heard before. He turns around. He looks down the length of the streetcar. Lightning flashes again! And little Louis Lafitte froze in his tracks, so to speak. Why? Because almost all of the seats were occupied. And he could see his passengers very distinctly.
People.
Skeletons. Some of these skeletons, they clutched their cutlasses, you know, their big knives and their bony fingers. Some of them, even though they were only skulls, they had the long beards and the long mustachios. In some, they had the bandanas. In some, they had the eye patches, which of course was very odd because they only had holes for eyes, so what could they see? But they all had teeth. These yellowish brown stained tobacco teeth that clicked and clacked and clicked and clacked, and their skeleton jaw bones move up and down and sideways as though they were still chewing tobacco. And they nodded their skeleton skulls, and then slowly, as though they hadn't done this in a long, long time, they began to... Ah! It wasn't a scary horror. No. It was a simple, single like a horror a parrot might make when waking from an excellent dream. Because an excellent dream for a pirate would be a very bad dream for us, huh? It was a friendly, happy horror, a sort of, well, back in business kind of horror. Well, little Louis decided to get off at the next stop, or just get off, even if the streetcar didn't stop. But when he tried to open the door, he pushed and he pulled and he pushed and he pulled. It would not open! Picking up speed, they were picking up speed, they were on their way, but where? Where were they on their way to? What will happen to little Louis Lafitte? Will he ever escape? Oh, maybe it's best that we never find out. Maybe next time.
That evening, Jack, Mojo, and Dominique have dinner together.
You're certainly right about the food down here. This steak, although a little bloody, it's terrific.
You know, speaking of bloody steaks, this is vampire country.
What?
I said this is vampire
country. I heard you, Mojo. You're not going to tell me there's vampires in New Orleans.
Vampires?
Oh, God, that's all I need. Dreams of being chased by a zombie right into the arms of some vampire.
What about Madonna Vampire? You didn't seem to mind having her arms wrapped around you.
Who is the Madonna Vampire?
Oh, she's not a vampire. Well, not a real one. Mojo, she doesn't suck blood. I mean, you've seen her teeth. Look, how did we get started on vampires anyway?
All I said was this is vampire country.
Doesn't Anne Rice live here?
The writer? The one who writes about that Count, what's his name?
Vampir Lestat.
That's right.
Well, at least voodoo doesn't have vampires, right?
Are you kidding? Man, that's the dark side of voodoo, brujeria.
Do you mean witchcraft?
Sure, but there's good witches and bad witches.
This is in voodoo.
It's under the same umbrella.
Well, how do you know which witch is which?
Oh, man, you couldn't resist that, could you?
Tell us, Mojo.
Okay, the good witches, they keep their secrets in a cauldron and sprinkle it with holy water.
Witches use holy water?
Yeah, that's what makes them good.
The evil spirits are frightened away. They get burned by the touch of holy water. The chants they use for the invocations are called mambos.
Mambos? Limbos? What are you talking about?
In Haitian voodoo, mambo is also the name they give to a high priestess.
Is this white magic or black magic?
The witchcraft I'm talking about, whether you use it for good or evil, isn't exactly a part of the religion. They say it's a faster way to get results than working with the orisha.
So if they don't use the orishas, what do they use?
The dead.
The dead?
It's in the cauldron. That's where the Nganga, or dead spirit, or supernatural force, is said to reside.
There really is a witch's cauldron?
Can you pass some butter?
The cauldron. That's where they keep the human skull and bones, graveyard dust, crossroad dust, herbs, insects, animals, and bird carcasses. You know, stuff like that.
Even in voodoo, they have cauldrons?
Oh, yeah. And once you get to cooking in the cauldron, you start chanting the mambos to invoke the spirit and get it to obey you.
Oh.
But you gotta feed the Nganga.
Feed it what?
It likes blood. Usually, they use a rooster.
Give me the salt, huh?
But first, you gotta go to a graveyard and dig up a corpse. Best a recent burial, where the brain is still present.
Still present? You mean still intact?
Could you give me another roll, please?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
It's okay if it's decayed a little. The best brain when you're doing black witchcraft is the brain of a criminal or an insane person. They say the brains of white people are the best.
Why white people?
They're easier to influence than the brain of a black person.
Oh.
That's what they say. So you write the name of the dead person on a piece of paper and place it on the bottom of your cauldron. You add a few coins and some earth from the grave. And then you sacrifice a rooster. Put some of his blood in there.
And that's all you add to the cauldron?
No. There's lots more. Like ants, worms, lizards, bats, a tarantula, centipede, a wasp, a scorpion, and a few more things I don't think you want to know about.
Thank you.
That's it then?
No. What you've been doing is creating the Nganga. Now you get to use it.
How?
Don't ask.
I'm glad you asked. Let's say you're doing black witchcraft, and a woman comes and asks you to kill her husband because he's throwing his money away on other women. So then you go to a cemetery where you buy the life of the husband with a silver coin, like maybe 50 cents.
50 cents?
You pay for his life by burying the coin there in the cemetery. That becomes the symbolic grave of the man. Then you take a live cat and a hammer and a big nail and...
Mojo.
Are you sure you want to hear this?
Mojo, I never asked to hear any of this. I don't even know how we got onto this god-awful subject.
Vampires.
And what do vampires have to do with this Nganga you've just created?
Like I said, you add rooster's blood to the cauldron to feed the Nganga. Well, some black witches use their own blood.
Why their own blood?
They say it makes it more potent. But some say the Nganga may become addicted to human blood and become a vampire.
Wonderful.
And then,
that
vampire may come after the person who fed it their blood.
Well, I'm glad you made this all perfectly clear.
Can I have a light?
Sure. You look a little, white.